I gotta say that again.
Go into now supervisors.
Now we're going to the supervisors meeting, 8:49, June 11th, 2014. Open meeting access posted on the southeast corner of the wall. Please stand for the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Again, the open meeting act is posted on the southeast corner of the wall. Attendance by observation: Juergens, Hill, Dorn, Bauman, Lytle, Byers, Setzer. Next is the consent agenda. The consent agenda consists of the general agenda, approval of minutes of the meeting held May 28th, 2014. Approve all claims through June 11th, 2014 in the amount of $844,785.27. Approve and place on file all correspondence received. Approve District Court Summary Free Forecast Report and Register of Deeds Fee Report for the month of May 2014. Approve Utility Permit 995 to Windstream to Plow and Backhoe, a communications line located in Section 34, Township 2 North, Range 8 East, Island Grove Township. Approve Utility Permit 996 to Windstream to Plow and Backhoe, a communications line located in Section 25, Township 2 North, Range 8 East, again in Island Grove Township. In Section 2, Township 1 North, Range 8 East, Liberty Township. Approve Utility Permit 997 to Windstream to Plow and Backhoe, a communications line located in Section 15, Township 4 North, Range 5 East in Blakely Township. And to approve Dennis Rosine as a board member for the Planning and Zoning Committee. Need a motion to approve or disapprove items 1 through 9 or consider something separate?
Terry.
Motion to approve.
Motion to approve moved by Byers.
Second. Matt, I have item number, claim number 14050585, voted on separately. It is a payment to Johnny's Welding in the amount of $1,297.31.
Okay, consider that exemption. Is that okay?
This would be the new claim number because we had to add some claims, and so your numbers got changed.
Okay, so the new claim number that we'll vote on separately, so we'll pull from the regular claims, would be 140601.07.
Change cover sheets.
Matt, just got a couple of comments. One, the claims, $400,000 transfer to road department in this claim, so that's explains a little bit about the total dollar amount. And then the other one, Dennis Rosine, I believe he's replacing Frerichs on the planning and zoning, runs Rosine's machine up there east of Cortland, and seems pretty excited to be able to be on the planning board and part of that and stuff. So
if you've never had an opportunity to visit with Dennis, he's a very interesting, very intelligent man. He's a good conversationalist. He'll out-talk you, so he's a good guy. I think he'll be a good addition. Yep. All right, we have a motion to second with Juergens claim being pulled, so we'll vote 7-0 to approve. Now we will consider claim to Johnny's Welding in the amount of $1,297.31.
I would move approval.
Moved by Byers.
Second.
Second by Spencer. Any further discussion? Vote. 6 in favor, with Juergens abstaining. Next would be the regular agenda and comments from the public and requests for future agenda items. I see Glennis McClure.
Hello, everyone. I'm Glennis McClure, and I reside at rural Blue Springs, and I am the new Engage Executive Director. Probably haven't heard from Engage for a couple of months. I've had kind of a busy schedule and haven't had a chance to get here. So someone sent a note yesterday and said, looks like you've hit the ground running, and I hope that that's what your impression is as well. It has been a great experience so far with working with Engage. And just if you wouldn't mind, I just want to let you know of what my sort of charges are right away with our board and the things that I need to do. And we're working hard at that. Actually, I would like to make sure that the public provides to us any commercial property buildings that could be listed. We have a LOA system, location one, that is part of our, it's on our website, and it's important, I think, to have all of those properties listed so that if anyone's looking for an opportunity, you know, they'll come. So that's one of my things, is to get out, work with realtors. If you know of properties that could be listed, could be of help to someone commercially, let me know. Also, it's being prepared for those when we have inquiries of a company or someone that wants to move here. And so sort of building that template and be able to respond with project proposals is something that we're working on. Also, one of the things that I really talked to the selection committee about was that whole retention thing, helping the businesses that are currently here. And I've had a chance to visit with some businesses individually. In fact, yesterday I talked with one, and they said, you know, it just seemed like economic development for a long time was really focused on bringing in new and forgetting about who's here. And I really believe that what we need to do is pay attention to who's here and what their needs are. And so, you know, I'm trying to get that done. So that's what we call business retention and expansion type of work. And I'm entering that information into the Synchronous system, which the state utilizes, and it's a database, basically, so we can track what's going on now with them and how their growth, or, you know, so we can kind of see what's going on with the businesses and what the future holds. And also growing our partnerships with Engage. I'd like to, you know, start with sort of a campaign called Engage with us and invest with us. So partner with us. And I'm glad, I really appreciate the support that the county board has given for economic development as far as the whole county is concerned. Of course, marketing. And I think the other thing is, I'm really, really thankful to be a part of Engage because I'm a native from here. And I think hopefully my attitude is that, and I hope others will catch on to this, that we need to be positive and bring people here. And, of course, the businesses are looking for skilled workforce. And so, you know, again, talking about the amenities that we have here in the county and the cities that you know, communities here, and getting good people to come here and work here. And those that have some skills are really what our companies are looking for. So that whole marketing effort is really important. Also, small business and entrepreneurial growth. That is something that I've had in my background for many, many years. And so I've already met with some folks that are interested in starting a business here. And sometimes they need just that sort of hand-holding, the business planning aspect, bringing in other resource people that can help them. So I'm pretty well connected with that sort of thing, and I want to remind folks that if they have ideas, don't be hesitant to bring those ideas forth. Again, workforce issues, working with education, and working with skill developments, you know, that's really a key thing here. And again, engaging with all the communities. Of course, Beatrice is a big investor in Engage, as well as the county. So again, getting to know the people in the various communities. I know a lot, you know, from being from this county, but I want to make sure we're visiting with the leaders and getting out there to know what we're about and listening to their ideas and efforts. So I brought some cards along for each of you, and any questions now? I know I'll be back in a month or two probably for our more formal report on how things are going, so. Thank you.
All right. I think our next meeting is the 19th, I believe.
Right, next week, yeah. So I'll give you a card.
And okay. Anybody's welcome. Yes.
Thank you.
Fun technique.
Very much. Okay. Thanks, Glennis.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything else for public comments? If there's anything else on the agenda that comes up you want to comment on, we can gauge your comments. Okay. Next, committee reports, Building and Grounds, Winter Lights.
Building and Grounds, Dave Jones. We've been busy, but not too busy.
Good morning. I'm glad we did not have any storm damage here. That was a good thing for us. After looking around the other parts of town, it looked pretty bad. During the Building and Grounds committee meeting, we had discussion on moving the DMV waiting area to the west, further down the hallway to free up the center corridor, and I would probably just install a speaker that would go through the driver's license area into that hallway area. Sometimes there's only a few people waiting in that area, but other times there could be as many as 30 people, so it kind of gets congested in the middle there. And I did have discussion with DMV, and they were fine with that. And then the other thing we talked about were after the flags were not put up on Memorial Day, having a backup flag. This would be a nylon 5x8 flag, and that would be only in case of bad weather. We would still use the cotton flags unless it's bad weather. There are 320 flags, and nylon ones are $40 a piece, so that does come to $12,800, and we discussed possibly having fundraisers of some sort to help with that.
We have a Friends of the Courthouse committee, and I think, Dave, we're going to talk to them and see about doing some fundraising rather than doing a budget thing, and I think we can find people to support it. But we'll work on that.
And then the other thing we talked about will be on the agenda would be the stone repair on the building. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave, for all you do.
Equalization, we beat that dead horse. Anything else?
Oh.
Finance and insurance.
We did talk about a committee meeting. We got our letter from NIRMA, who handles most of our county insurance, and the increase... proposed increase of $20,659 for the next, well, we'll actually pay it here in June, but it actually is what covers us for next year. But we pay that in the previous fiscal year. So, but we had some discussion about our deductibles, and they had a chart in here, and it shows where we're at and what it would be savings or cost savings on if we went with higher deductibles on anything. And I think at the committee meeting, and Don was going to check to see, I guess, if how many claims we had, you know. But, yeah.
Yes, you were.
Well, Gus can probably, he's had the most of the, you know, recent, besides the damage that we've had on the buildings and stuff. I can just remember some of them that we've had. But you've had several vehicles and things.
I had, we had three so far that were damaged. One, a few dents. I haven't got the estimates on that yet. The other ones were, we had one up north, obviously, got hammered, about $5,000 damage, I think. I saw an estimate somewhere in that area. So that's the only ones I know right now, just three. No window breakage, just dents.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But for the purpose of our deductible here, we I mean, we had discussion if our county had 8 or 10 claims a year with NIRMA.
We've had, like, the storage that – I don't
storage
know if they're
shed.
Considering that as one incident or not, but we've had that. We've had your vehicles with deers. We've had the roof. We've had the windows screens at one point. We've had equipment that – an owl burn out our equipment on a line. We've had various – weird things.
Well, we should be checking with NIRMA on the dents, even, as far as those windows are concerned, if that's damage. What is covered? We should look to see what.
Oh, we are.
We are.
We're in the process.
Yeah.
And get submitted every time.
Okay. Oh, yeah. On this.
So I didn't know anything about it other than what I read in the paper.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll get submitted. Just like a car deer accident, we submit it. And they'll, you know, the thing is, some of these cars might be the ones we're getting rid of this time around, but that's just part of new business, I guess. I don't think they'll cut me a check and say, oh, don't worry about fixing it. So, anyway.
No, but our auto deductible right now is at a $250, and this is the time if we wanted to by the 23rd of June if we wanted to change anything or not, you know. And so, just at committee, we just had discussion on those, and a lot of people have gone to a higher deductible. But are we, as a county, are we incurring enough claims throughout the year that it would be an advantage or not? I guess that's kind of where our discussion was at the committee.
We figured if there were 10 claims on just vehicles alone, our $2,500 savings would be
gone
like that. So we'd be better off keeping the lower deductible because the frequency of claims.
Yeah.
And that was our discussion. There's probably not a benefit for us to go up because of the frequency of claims that we have.
Well, we haven't had 10 claims, have we?
That's what we didn't know.
Yeah. We don't know. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So maybe what's our timeline? We have a little time.
We have until the
23rd of June. They wanted to be notified if you wanted to change something, right?
And I can try and get a printout from them or find out from this past year what.
There you go. If you can get a printout and stuff. And then the other, I guess, our Gage County we'll pay $260,000 for Tenerma for insurance for next year, but almost $130,000 or half of it's for our workman compensation. So it doesn't include just, you know, it's general liability, law enforcement liability, auto physical damage, property buildings. There's a bond for crime and just things like that. But half of that is for workman's compensation that we pay. So that's just for explanation of our bill a little bit. So.
Right. And if you check those, if you compare those prices with the general marketplace, they're substantially less.
Yeah, yeah. Not complaining about that. Just this was our time to visit about this.
A lot of money.
Yeah. Otherwise, and Denny is on the NERMA board, so if anybody has a question, Denny will be able to help us.
Thank you, Myron.
It's right here on the bottom of the letter, Denny Byers. So that's about what we had from finance, I guess. You know, we'll keep working on the budget just a little bit. Did you have something else?
Sheets went out to all the budget sheets, to all the offices, and fill those out. And I've gotten three back so far.
And I think Don's been visiting with people, too, a little bit, that our next claims process is the last one of the fiscal year and stuff. So that something, if it's going to be included in our current fiscal year, it will need to be in our next claim process to get that done. And that's what we have.
Anything else for finance and insurance? No. Human resource, employee relations.
No report.
But I did find a copy of that. Give that to you? Who did I give that
to? You showed it to us at the meeting. I don't know where it ended up. We kind of passed it around.
Well, there's a discussion in the handbook about the grievance process, and I found that old or the new process that we had talked about before. And I guess I'll have to...
The draft of...
It was just a draft. Yeah, I did find that. Okay, good. I'll resurrect that again. I'll get that to Donna and have her shoot that out. What did I do with that?
It was here Monday, but I don't know.
Did you take it with you? Is it in your bag?
I'll look, but I think so. It might be.
I've got copies.
I hope you've got more copies.
always get copies before you bring it in this room.
It was floating around here.
Doug, what are you smiling for? Do you have it?
Doug wasn't here Monday.
If he wasn't here, we'll blame it on him then.
Well, you blame me. I had Region 5 meetings. So
and Denny wasn't here either, so.
I've got it someplace.
It was floating around
that
here on the table.
That is something that we do want to look at again. It's the grievance process. Got a handful of things, I think.
Law enforcement, emergency management.
Okay, emergency management on that end of it. Obviously, we discussed a little bit of the fact that Tim had quite a bit on his hands to deal with, being just newly hired, and then have the storm roll through, and we kind of talked through that a little bit, and seems like Tim's pretty comfortable with working through them things, and I think. I think he's going to do a fine job as he works through it here. But really, that was all we had to discuss with emergency management. And then with the law enforcement, there was some of the SRS radios have come in. Doug, I don't know if he's prepared to update us on that.
I'll give you a quick update.
Okay.
Doug Klaus, Chief Deputy. Yesterday, I got a phone call from D&D. He believes the remainder of everything, lots of boxes, he said, but looks like everything is probably in. So Joe and I are going to be going up tomorrow and meeting with, I've been in contact with Mike Jeffries and Corey Simmons quite a bit here recently, back and forth, and working on our fleet mapping, and so they can start writing code plugs and going back and forth with programming and making arrangements to get vehicles moved down here so they can begin installations on some of that. So we're going to work through that, and get a good bunch of it done tomorrow. Invoices are coming in a few at a time as they ship equipment out and stuff, and I've got two more for the clerk and stuff, so we're getting through that. And then I met with Nancy this morning down at the highway department and went through our planning and zoning regs and found where it says in there that Gage County or any other governmental agency can install radio antennas and equipment on those towers at no cost to the county for the rental space. So we found where that was. And so we've got copies of both the Verizon and the Horvath Tower items so that we can submit that to him tomorrow then as well. So he was interested in having someone find that for him, so we did, and so we'll be able to give that to him so he can research that and do some kind of a feasibility study on that. So otherwise, it's just moving into the training process, and then for the system user group meetings, they've got us on the list of that, and then there's a library and some different things with all of our equipment serial numbers and how that goes. And Matt got a CC, I think, from Pam Kemper on that. She needed his information as chairman and stuff to have on there for our service agreement and stuff, so I gave her that. But that's kind of where it's at. I think we're moving full speed ahead, and if everything went 100% perfect, he would like to be able to maybe see us begin using this or get us online in some form or fashion by July 1, he said. So that's moving pretty quick. So that's where it's at.
Okay. The next item, thanks, Doug. The next item that we discussed that I think the sheriff would like to expand on and maybe discuss a little bit more is the surveillance system we're looking at putting in, adding cameras and such. So
I'm going to defer this to Doug because he was there that day with Dialed in the walkthrough. I know when Dave had that to the Building and Grounds Committee, it's probably a little confusing to look at all that. So I'm going to have Doug walk through you on that and be very specific where those cameras are at and the reasons why we're doing each one of those and where they are, because he was, like I say, he was there that day, and he can probably do the top of his head. So,
well, and I'll have Tony Shepherdson jump in here too.
Gus, is this security sensitive that we should probably?
I don't think that we want to probably say where every camera is going to be. I mean, I don't want to go against what the sheriff's saying, but we can give you an overview without being real specific, I think, and to give you a satisfaction of that. But on, you want to grab your invoice here. We've got on the totals that are listed here, and we can kind of go through a little bit off of this estimate here. Do they all have a packet of that?
I don't. Dave, did they get packets of that when you're talking just the one game?
Yeah, I did not.
No, they don't have anything.
Well, we've got a total number here, and it's kind of broke down a little bit here. The first item on there is one of the DVRs that currently exists in the jail that our system is on over there is they're going to replace that one with a new one at no charge. They've done that before where we've upgraded. They'll go ahead and exchange it out or swap it out at no cost to us. So they've done that two other times before, one for our interview room and one for back in the jail there. So the first one, there's no charge for that replacement on that. That's a 16-channel DVR. The second item, there's two DVRs on there. Those are both high-def DVRs. And to go with a high-def DVR, you know, takes high-def cameras. And so for the outdoor use primarily is where we'll benefit the most on that. And so what we kind of did is we did a walk around the facility. I mean, we've done that before, but we got real specific on, you know, 360 degrees of coverage around the facility, entrances and exits, our fenced-in area, the area in the alley by the where we had the problems with the windows, the new parking area. So there's three additional cameras that were included in there for the north part in the alley, and then that new parking area there, you know, by the veterans office and stuff. So those all have IR capabilities, or a smart IR, it's called. We could take some of the existing cameras that are outside that are a non-HD camera and move those to maybe to some of the spots indoors where we don't need quite the high definition, and save those high definition ones for around the outside of the facility where it's the most appropriate. So we've upgraded some of those. We can swap some out. It added about $100 a camera to go with a high def camera. We kept some of the analog PTZ cameras that we have because it would be very expensive to go to a high def PTZ camera right now. They're into the thousands of dollars for real good ones. So we put a few cheaper HD cameras in some of those spots that PTZ would normally cover from one area to the other, and left the older analog non-HD cameras where they were. And then the one thing that's not included on here, because we didn't have it spec'd in initially, was some audio. And if we want, we can only have up to a certain number of zones for audio in there with the DVRs. without going into a bunch of real expensive cameras, to include audio with the cameras is too cost prohibitive to do it. So he figured about, you know, there's a $30 for the microphone, then $20 for a bracket, and then 8 cents a foot for additional wiring for the audio. And so that we would prioritize certain zones throughout the facility to where we could have audio. And so they can run that cable at the same time they do with the cameras, so we're not going to have any additional labor to do that. But that would be the only thing that's not included on there, because that we didn't have that figured in there at first. So so about 70-ish dollars a zone for audio. So if we prioritize one in, like, each day room or certain day rooms throughout the facility or hallway or booking or wherever it is that we feel that we need the best part of that, then that's what's going to give us, you know, the biggest bang for our buck as far as audio. So that is not included on there. Otherwise, it's just kind of a good faith estimate, you know, and stuff, and they figure about, you know, however many feet of coax and different things that they're going to need, you know, throughout the facility. And then if we do need to swap out some of those cameras outside for inside, we can do that. And those, they're still good cameras. So if we need to keep some of them or back for backups, or but as we move forward with this over the years and technology, by going to the two HD DVRs, then we're already one step ahead of the curve on some of that, doing it now versus trying to add in one and then start replacing one camera at a time. Now, if we need to upgrade or replace one camera, we're already set up for an HD DVR to go ahead and do that up front and have a lot better video quality on our system. So, and we're gonna change the format, I guess, of this too, to where how we can monitor this. Currently, you have to log on, you know, and go to this, and it's, you know, everything is still secure. But we have the capability with this, for this ICES real time, that it can be monitored through your smartphone or your iPad or whatever. So if we're having problems, you know, in and around the facility, Lieutenant Shepherdson could log on then through a $29 app, and he gets a phone call from his jail supervisor, you know, or the on-duty person that's working in the facility that we're having problems outside. He can go ahead and log right on. He can see what's going on outside the facility, and, you know, then we can dispatch people to the appropriate spot, you know, to where we might be having an issue outside the facility. So it is a lot of money, but it's also at the same time, it's a good cost savings, because the prices that you see are reflected because of a special that they got, you know, when they went out to Vegas to the technology conference they have once a year and stuff, and so they got some real good pricing on that. So we were able to upgrade, you know, we initially thought it was going to be like $5,000 more to upgrade that, but it ended up only being, you know, a couple thousand dollars more to upgrade a lot of this HD stuff versus the analog stuff. So that's kind of what we have figured there. So
can you just explain what isn't working so that we understand why we need to do this?
Well, it's not so much this stuff isn't working, it's that we have gaps in coverage. You know, I hate to use that word to throw back to the radio days, but we have certain areas around the facility that we are not able to monitor right now. Some of the key areas might be where there might be an entrance or a fire exit or some other areas around the secure part of the perimeter in the alley to where we have problems with people loitering around the facility and with the vandalism issues.
And we've had a lot of vandalism issues other than we've had the one guy throwing stones, and we had a lot of others.
There's one other window that was broke prior to me taking this position. I don't know. That was over
on the north side of the facility.
I don't know how that one got broke. As far as the cameras down in the jail, this would be 17 additional cameras to what we keep the one that we've already got. But one of my biggest concerns is a housing unit where we get, you know, vandalism, fights. We bring them in, we interview them. Of course, I fell in the shower. Well, this is going to help us with the assaults that happened back in the housing areas, the vandalism back there, and so that's big to me to have those in the housing unit areas.
And in custody deaths, I guess, is probably kind of a big topic, you know, that this hopefully will be able to monitor those activities in those day room areas, you know, and these areas don't necessarily monitor the areas of the shower and the restroom areas.
And we can't
do that. So, but any of the areas or activities that occur in the day rooms, you know, might be able to be of evidentiary value, and maybe if we could help prevent one, you know, death or serious incident in the jail, you know, that's probably a pretty small price to pay in the long run, I guess. But so this everything configured here inside and outside the facility should give us pretty good coverage. And if we have to use some additional cameras that we might already have existing and can relocate those, you know, down the road, if we find we have some small gaps that we need to cover, we could probably use some of those cameras to help fill in some of those voids. So.
And where are you proposing these dollars come from?
Wherever you feel most appropriate. I don't know.
This building and grounds, I would assume it was.
It was something like that, wasn't it? For the project or something.
I thought, Denny, was the money we have budgeted every year, the $120,000. Dave and I were talking. We thought that would probably be the most appropriate place for it to come from. I think we spent, what, $8,000, Myron, something like that? $10,000?
No, we budgeted $122,000 this year. And this last project with the upgrades over there on the facility, we'll spend around the $20,000, $22,000 so far. We'd spent $5,000 to $6,000, and then I believe that was $17,000.
Oh yes,
you know,
yes,
just
yes. Yeah. So we're up in the high 90s. What's
yeah, we're between 95 and 100,000 left in balance in that budget for this year. Now right. I don't know if this will be done this year or if it'll come in next year's budget.
But that was a thought. Is that money
have to bring it in for approval? Place it on the agenda first. Present. What's that?
It is not. Yeah, I think it is. Worded that way.
Yeah, it is.
The only thing I guess I'd like to say on that is my understanding of that $120,000 line item was that that's more from the days when we had the fire marshal issues, and it's not so much I dare say slush fund to do odd projects. It's more the repair stuff and getting up to speed as far as the fire marshal stuff goes. And I think we're teetering on that line on that. I'm willing to approve it with that, if that's where Myron says that we need to put it as far as finance or budget goes, but I guess I'm a little bit iffy on
Well, on the question bring up on that, has anyone brought this to us that we need to do this? Have any of the safety people have come in that say this is something we have people in jeopardy and we need to make these changes?
Well, I would think with $1,000 worth of vandalism in the back and two deaths in the jail, it would be a really good red flag that we'd want to look at something.
No, now. I'm asking if anybody has come in and told us in their inspections as they look at the jail.
Oh, our safety committee, you mean, for the county?
Yes.
No, not that I'm aware of. No.
Okay, so what they've seen what we have and they're okay with it?
Well, their opinions vary, obviously. They're not one getting sued, Denny.
But that's who you bring to us when you want something. You say, these people tell us we got to do this.
Well, I'm telling you we'd like to have this because I'm the jail administrator. The safety committee has nothing to do with this. This is an internal audit we did. And I'm thinking, after we made that last case and those windows being vandalized, off the one camera we had in back, made the case for us, it's a pretty strong case that it would be a good system to have in the facility.
Yeah, I'm not arguing about that.
I know.
I'm just arguing about whether someone is telling us we need to do it.
No, not at all.
How many cameras are in use now over there?
Overall, inside and outside?
Right now, as we speak, how many cameras are there over there?
One outside.
Looks like here you have 9 that you're upgrading and 17 new ones.
I think right now, currently.
Or is it the other way around?
What we have in place right now, I think, is 16.
But 17.
Well, 16 channel DVR that we currently have, yeah. I believe, and that's full.
16 in place right now, and we're going to add how many to it? Are you going to replace them?
We're going to add some and we're going to replace some, so it gets a little bit confusing there. We're going to try and use the ones we can that we still have, but replace the ones in key areas with new cameras. So we have to add additional ones for the day room areas, obviously. And then we're going to add a few around the perimeter that would close those gaps that we don't have overlapping coverage for the current ones. And any of the ones that we can reuse, we're going to take those and put those inside and maybe replace some of the HD ones with those outside. So we're going to have a little bit of room left with two 16-channel DVRs is the way I get it. And so if we do that, we'll still have a little bit of room for expansion, but otherwise we'd have to go to a great big DVR, you know, and then when one thing breaks down on that, it's very expensive to replace. And even if we had one DVR go down, we can prioritize certain cameras where we'd still have some coverage throughout the facility.
One other comment I'd like to make, just because we have money left in a fund doesn't mean we have to spend it. So,
No, and I'm not, and I don't, that's what the current budget, that's what's left in the current budget. Okay. But this here,
I don't know if I've heard yet that they could get this done in by the 23rd or not. I don't know that. I mean, there's a more, probably a greater likelihood it'll come in next year's budget. Probably. But that's just me sitting here today looking at it. So
don't I know that. That's a valid point.
No.
And for clarification, you know, due to restrictions on where you can place the cameras, none of these cameras would be in place where the two suicides occurred, right?
Yes, they would.
Yeah.
They would be?
The only place see, on these cameras, you'll be able to see partially into the cell. You just can't, we can't point to the very back where the restrooms are.
Or the shower area.
Okay. Or the shower area.
Everywhere else I can record.
Okay. And it certainly could prevent something serious, you know,
well,
in the day room or outside the jail.
The idea behind it, John, is it'd be similar to if a guy had a new style pod jail. Huh. Master control is always watching all the cameras and see what's going on. Here, we don't have the pod, but we have housing and booking areas. Everybody's got access to those cameras. They can view it. Somebody's always watching. Maybe we could catch somebody at least attempting. That would be the hope anyway.
We've got a screen in the housing office. Yeah. We've got a screen in the booking room. I monitor from my desk. Julie monitors, Scott Ed monitors, so we've got a lot of eyes watching the cameras as we work. So,
one last question I have: it isn't going to take another person to watch these cameras now, is it?
No.
You're going to use existing help.
Yep.
Yes. Unless you want to volunteer.
No.
Okay.
Question I had too, though: there's no, I guess, ongoing cost. I mean, like every year, will there be a cost for this, or once this system's in place, it's?
Yeah, I mean, the only issues that we've ever had is if we've had a problem with either a camera going out or a problem with the DVR or something like that we've had to replace it because it was.
But there's no fee set up or nothing?
No, it's not a monitoring fee or anything like that that we pay, no. And even the app that I was talking about, that's a one-time app fee that you pay. It's like $30, I think, or $29-something, you know, per device if we choose to do that on two or three devices or whatever, and that's pretty small.
And Tony, in some way, would this make it easier for your staff to watch multiple sites at one time?
Yeah. Yeah. The cameras do not replace them going back and doing their physical check. It's just them, you know, when they're in the housing office or doing a report, they can look up the screen and monitor what's going on in the facility.
And back to your question, Gary, coming out of this fund, this jail fund, I agree with you on that, but I have we haven't sat down and discussed with Dave what's left in, that your fund or anything like that, or even as far as budgeting this for next year, we haven't had that discussion really as a committee. I mean, I just threw out the dollars of what's in that jail fund or whatever. So
I was going to bring up also there's actually two line items. For one is general jail repair, and the other would be with 1304, the more for the fire marshal.
One for the sheriff and one for the jail. And that was set up as a separate complete line item, but it was outside of Gus's budget, and it was put in the building and grounds so that it could be handled through there. Now, Dave doesn't usually code anything out of that. It's coded when the board passes something to do over there. And that's how it was set up, was to do all the fire marshal, because he had a big laundry list at one time.
Right.
We had to come into compliance.
And I do not know the amount of what that 1302 line. I don't know what the amount is. There would be some left in that one.
There's some in each one of them.
And I guess what I'm hearing, I guess just my thought is what I'm hearing is that some of this would be buildings and grounds, but sounds like some portion of it actually is cost of doing business in the jail also. So I would assume some of this probably split up, maybe part of it to the jail, but jail finances and part of it to buildings and grounds is almost what it sounds like to me.
Well, Myron, we used to go years ago, I think before you were on the board, we used to have a line item in the sheriff's budget for things like this, but it was such a small amount. Don and I were talking one year, years ago, we just took it out and deleted it.
I think the committee decided that
it was. It's better to come out of a separate, so we just took it out.
Is it under sheriff?
No, it'd be under building and grounds.
Building and grounds. About what page is building and grounds on? I never know. It's later.
51, I think.
51.
41. You here.
Sheriff, while they're looking at that, one other thing, remind me, I used to be that the standby generator was on the north side of the building. Is it also back there yet?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
It's tested. Is it weekly, Tony? Monthly.
Sure.
Test that. On the generator.
On the generator monthly.
Monthly.
Well, I'm just thinking here that that's another reason to have coverage back there is to make sure that that thing is.
Well, I think when the young man goes to court on his formal charge, he's going to find out just how expensive that's going to be for him.
Separate.
Because I know the deputy called me a couple nights ago and said he confessed to some more windows. I think the drive to come down was $2,400 to drive down and do the installation. I don't know how many windows we had, but each window was between $1,200 and $1,500 apiece.
Sheriff, you probably
so it's certainly going to be more felony charge, but like we discussed in the committee,
but this jail building repair,
he's going to be able to do restitution and who knows, but at least the candle out is catching.
I suspect the offer may be there, but I don't know if the ability is
appropriate. Like $17,000 here,
right? So
I wouldn't count on.
It's frustrating because they're one except for two or
that's more than
gone. Commercial. So
well, they don't spend the restitution money yet.
I'm going to call and ask about putting screens on the outside if that's something they think they can do because
they, only makes sense.
It'd be worth it to do that. I've not submitted that to insurance. They're in the process of doing that right now for some hopefully coverage back on it. So.
Now, are those windows structurally? Are they damaged to this point that structurally they're not?
Well, that's what I'm going to ask him if he thinks it's just cosmetic. Or if it's structurally, it's damaged at some degree. So,
and like I said, I don't think
because we have nothing on the inside or outside like they used in the old days. So I want to make sure that they're comfortable with it. Professionals are, and then we'll go from there, I guess.
Okay.
Yep.
And submitted that.
Were we given any kind of guarantees when we put those windows in that they were non-destructible?
No, I'm going to call and ask about it, but I'm sure you know that the city puts those big rocks behind there. And if you throw it hard enough, to glass, it didn't shatter. It just hit a little area pinhole, and then just spiderwebbed out. So you can't sit there and knock on the window and knock it out yet by any means. It looks bad, but I'll have to have them come down, double-check it, and make sure. And I guess if they opt not to want to fix them, I guess that's going to be a decision Building and Grounds will have to make, but I want to get their opinion first on it, make sure we got all the facts. So.
How old is this person?
Excuse me?
How old is this person?
20s, isn't he, right here?
Yeah.
Was he impaired?
Pretty
young.
What?
Is he impaired?
I don't believe so. He just mad at his ex-girlfriend.
Yeah, she wouldn't answer the phone or something.
Yeah. And I said, she's in jail. Can't get any better than that.
20-year-old unimpaired person picks up rocks and chucks them at windows. And just to say it sounds stupid. On a scale that doesn't get up to Rolo.
I drive by back there at least two or three times a week, but I've missed that guy.
Well, I can put you out more often if you like. It'd probably help.
That's a good thing.
Did you want to touch base, Gary, on the other stuff right now? Or?
Go for it.
Okay. I think there's a little misunderstanding. I want to make sure Gary had touched base with this morning. On the screening station for the courthouse itself, we're not implementing anything right now. What we're doing is we're getting some facts and information together for my committee to look at. It kind of sped things up for us because we got caught off guard. We got such an extremely good deal on an x-ray machine that we jumped on it. We have it. And it's paid for and done over with. So we have that. But Brian, back here, Sergeant Davidson's in the courthouse now. He's on the security committee with me and the other two gentlemen in, and Dave. And we're trying to get as much information as we can for you. It involves absolutely no renovation of the courthouse whatsoever. It'll be more than one exit and more than one entrance. We're trying to accommodate a lot of the different things. So I'm trying to think of the questions the board might have before I even get to you with it to sit down and talk about it. So we're working on it, and we're trying to get it done as quickly as we can, but I don't know when that'll be. But we are working on it, but nothing's been implemented, certainly without committee and board knowing about it and them signing off on it. So just clarify that so you all understand. You might see Sergeant Davidson's down there. We have some cutouts to scale and equipment sitting on the floor, just trying to get an idea if the fire marshal will be happy with the clearance. So we're not doing anything other than just playing around right now. Okay. Any questions? Okay. Thank you.
That's all I had.
Okay, Building and Grounds.
Matt.
Oh, yes. Let me speak to the timed event at 9:15. This is, I believe, the second time we've called for bids on the vehicle, the old extension office. We have no bids. So probably just scrap it, I guess, take it to scrap. That's why we didn't.
Okay. No bids at all for that.
Done. Terry, you got a windbreak we can stick this in? Or?
They have a demolition derby?
No, it's too late. Bidding's closed. Sorry. You want to give a dollar?
I'm going to give a dollar.
I'll give a 10.
Well, we should probably at least get scrap value for it.
Here, so. We might get something.
Road and Bridge?
Yes, sir.
Philly North Project contractor is in. We'll start milling June 9th. I don't know if that started, Myron. Did it
turned
in your
that.
Area on the Philly North? Adams Philly Road.
Yeah, they're started. There's a lot of trucks
okay.
coming from the north. I'll put it that way.
The milling.
I haven't drove on it to see or whatever. David might know.
I drove it last night, and they got quite a bit of overlay already done.
They do. They have started then.
That
June 9th was
corner.
The start time. Okay.
Yeah, they're almost down to there.
Okay.
And Galen might know, too, more what they on the Adams
yeah.
project.
They are.
They were just doing 1 mile, or are they doing 2 miles up there?
It's just that 1 mile from Pickerel South.
Pickerel South, okay, 1 mile. And they're done milling already, so they're overlaying now.
The buildings are piled there in our Adams facility. Oh. Utilize those for, like, field drives and stuff once the overlay's done.
The material, the overlay will begin, the way I understand it, the material will come out of Lincoln at their main plant.
So the Adams Philly Blacktop, yeah.
Yes.
That's all coming out of Lincoln.
Yep.
But, and maybe I worded it wrong when I wrote this up, but the shoe fly part, that's that's the Philly Bridge right there
right.
north of Philly. They're putting a shoe fly down for just for the construction people, not
right.
for the public.
Correct.
That road
yep.
will be closed.
Yeah, the road will be closed. Or is closed now.
It is closed.
Armor coating, if anybody's drove around through the county, it's all complete. We had about an overrun of approximately $14,000 on the gravel. This is just the setting of it. Way Galen explained it, they'll put the oil mixture down and then cover it with gravel. The gravel that we had planned on, he said 21 and 23, there's a fine line in there we had planned on using. It took a little more gravel than that to cover the oil that was laid down. So basically, that's what the overrun is coming from. We used a little more material on the gravel end of it. We had to do that just to cover up that you can't have that oil soaking up through the gravel that's laid down. So that's used approximately 450 tons of gravel.
Yeah.
So that's the amount.
Approximately $333 a mile more for gravel
yeah.
than
yeah.
what our bid came in as. And this was part of the bid process that could be included.
But to me, you get what you pay for. You get a little extra layer of material there. It should last that much longer. So, but, 450 ton of gravel is a lot of gravel. So we've got that on top. That is done. Striping is taking place right now as we speak. Galen, correct?
The center line stripe done yesterday on all 40, a little over 40 miles. They're starting the wide end stripes today.
Okay.
And that'll be done on the miles that we added on. The armor coat miles will be striped sometimes towards the ends of July.
Right. And the reason for that, there's still some excess gravel material on these roads that were armor coated. So Galen has been brooming some of those to the side, and because you want the paint right down on material, so you don't want to do that project, at the same time we're doing this. So they'll come back and do that part of it. Burlington Northern has come back with their estimate on the railroad crossing. Originally, if I remember right, the estimate was $50,000. That bid has now climbed to $84,000. So that's an easy to make way to make some money.
That's the Hickory Road crossing.
Hickory Road Railroad crossing, the west, yes. The gravel, Logan Township, there was an issue with gravel. Galen's came up with a solution for that, we think. Three of the truck and pups completely failed. Four of them would be a 25% reduction, and the five extras that was on that area were found to be okay. So there's going to be some deductions in payments to the trucking firm as well as the gravel pit on that. To correct the ones that completely failed, we're going to add a mixture of some three-quarter rock.
Yes.
And to get that back to the level it should be.
Terry, I talked to Deborah yesterday, and she was going to visit with Galen after I had conversation with Roger about sending a letter to the person that brought the concrete, so that they're, or not the concrete, the material, right, so that they're aware that
they got that out.
They got that. So, okay, because that's how.
I talked with Dan prior to sending that letter out too.
Okay, so just they're aware, because that's outside of anything we've ever done before. But there is a quality issue there, yep, that we need to address, and so they have notification when the final claim comes in. If they submit that claim, then we will probably have to deny that, and there's a process for that, and they can appeal that if they want. But they've been given notification.
Well, that, you know, there's specifications that they have to be under, you know, and good diligence from Logan Township all the way up to Galen's office that found this out and corrected the problem. So good work, I would say, on both ends of it. There was an issue 3.5 west of Cortland on the county road. Galen pulled some equipment and stuff where we were doing some culvert repair in Liberty Township, I believe.
Yes.
And moved it up there to correct the problem. That was a big issue that had to be corrected immediately. So if people see why aren't they finishing the project down south, it's because we had an emergency at the north end of the county we had it fixed.
That was secondary to the significant amount of rainfall that,
yes,
had a road.
Yeah, and that was the reason for that. You know, there's quite a bit of heavy rainfall up in there. Any other questions on road and bridge, Myron or John?
No, just that part in here about the Hickory Road. They're having a landowners meeting.
Yes,
and that's at landowners meetings to advise. The plans west of the bridge are done from Minnelli and Wagner. And the 17th of June, having a landowners meeting with all of them. They hope to have the plans east of there done by June 17th also. Mm-hmm. And this is to start the process, I guess, so that we can get that worked out with landowners as far as acquiring right-of-way and so on. Deborah's been working diligently on this, Galen and everybody, and Minnelli Wagner, and I know a lot of times Hickory Road's being brought up about that's a goal of this board always to get done, and I think we're finally seeing some movement. Between that and Burlington, that railroad won't be done right away. That is, that will be done when the road's done, but this is the cost, this $84,000 in here, this will be the cost when Burlington does do that, the cost of the county and stuff, so, but... It just takes a lot of time and effort, and I know Deborah's been really diligent on staying after everybody,
keeping things moving.
And Minnelli Wagner too. They've got the plans done and how the road's going to fit and everything. So when those people keep asking you, Gary, now you've got things. But this is again just a landowners meeting, not a community meeting or whatever. So.
And I talked to Deborah yesterday, and it sounded like the invitations were going out yesterday. The notifications for the meeting were going out yesterday. So,
aside from road and bridge, I just want to offer another thing. John and I attended a Boswell meeting on Monday evening at the city library down the road. Landfill. I mean, they say there's about 5.5 to 7 years of life in the existing landfill. I would opt toward the 5.5 years because it is moving, filling fast. There's been a change in personnel down there. Jason Moore is now down helping run the landfill as well as the street department, so he's got his hands full. Just a few numbers that were throughout that night. Expansion of the existing landfill, which would basically mean you've got the old part of the landfill and you've got the new section going up now. Well, there's a valley that was left in there. I thought they would probably fill up to it. Well, they're not. I guess they can't. They would have to line that existing and then fill that whole valley in. down the road now, we're talking five, seven years. The cost, preliminary cost on that was $3,490,000 to do that expansion. A new landfill on the south side of the road, which the land is there already, the preliminary cost, $10,320,000. And just to build a transfer station, which is bring the garbage, you dump it, take it to another site, is $5,330,000. So any of those three numbers are fairly significant. But that's basically preliminary, some numbers thrown out there, some issues that city, county is going to have to deal with down the road.
Now, the transfer station would be a one-time expense, but that would go on and on. And the others, they're going to expire regardless what you do. Whether you expand where you're at or go across the road in a period of time, then those are going to be gone also.
If I remember correctly, I don't know if the transfer station, that doesn't tell you what it's going to cost for you to transport it and move it on. So, you know, it doesn't look like the best way to go to me right now anyway. There's been some bleeding, as they referred it down there. Cost have exceeded income, well above it. Jason's been there for 2 weeks now, and he's through nobody's fault. It's just that one figure that stuck out in my mind is, as of right now, a landfill is charging approximately $43 a ton for garbage coming in. The break-even point was $79.80 a ton. So those numbers are going to, I mean, the discussion, you know, well, you know, it's a public service, and that's true to a point. But at some time, they're going to have to consider or start to run this like a business. Maybe not like a business, but go to that parameter where you can't continually lose money. Just because it's a government agency doesn't mean you can continue to lose money on it. So those are some of the issues we're faced with down there. And John... Some of the corrections would be, or some of the ideas brought up, close Saturday, open 5 days a week. Right now, it's opened 4 days a week, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, and they close at 2 in the afternoon. Well, with the money that the county and the city sunk into the C&D site on the south, it doesn't make it too practical to keep that open if it's closing at 2 o'clock in the day, you know, when the people that use that don't quit at 2 o'clock. So some of the items that were brought up for discussion was split the help, have some people open up at 7 and go to 3, and then some people come 2-3 hours later and they finish out till 6 o'clock. Wider hours, maybe that would be more capable, the haulers that bring material in. As was stated, the only way you're going to prove income is improve the waste coming in. You know, the more material you come in, the more money you're going to bring in. You're still going to have the same operating cost to run the facility. So that's about all I got to say about that. John, anything else?
I think it's back to what Senator Wallman said. You need to get the revenue up.
So anyway, it's an issue that will have to be resolved, as I see it. Did you have anything else on that?
Not really.
And one last thing was, you know, the other option was open 5 days a week, which I favor, closed on Saturdays. That would give that extra Wednesday to be open. The hours could be possibly 7 to 6 is what was talked about, you know. But then there's discussion, well, what about the guy that has to work all week, doesn't have any time to come bring in the garbage? So there's a lot of directions to go and a lot of answers that have questions that have to be answered yet, so.
I guess my take on Saturdays was that they, you know, calling it, they may have been overestimating the amount that they're losing on Saturday, and I could see some maybe adjustment to the Saturday hours, but I don't think I can ever be in favor of eliminating Saturday hours.
very busy out there on Saturday mornings.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you're talking about going to 6 p.m., that'll help cover some of those people.
That would change that team, too.
Yeah.
You're going to have to start recycling, Terry. You can't create so much waste down there.
I say burn it.
EPA's not around here, are they? Oh, my God. The county's plan is to burn it. Tires and whatever else. Just light her up.
Start a fire.
Okay. Next, approve. Anything else for committee reports? All done. Okay. Next, again, we have the timed item, which we had nothing on. Approve or disapprove recommendation for special use liquor license for the Gage County Fairgrounds Speedway and Beer Garden for the midway of the Gage County Fair, July 22nd to the 27th. I need a motion to approve or disapprove.
Move to approve.
Second. Moved by Lytle, seconded by Dorn. Discussion? Steve, you want to?
Aye.
Yes.
Well, as this may be my last time to vote against this.
You're going to vote for it this time, right?
No.
Okay, let the record show.
And I want to publicly acknowledge that Steve is my cousin. And the only time, even though he only lives 15 miles away from him, the only time I ever see him is when he comes here and I vote against his application for the special liquor license.
Well, then vote for it this time.
I don't know of any person or family, unless they're in the business of selling alcohol, whose life has been improved by alcohol. I bet every one of you can think of somebody whose life has been negatively impacted by alcohol. And I'm not a teetotaler. I like my glass of wine in the evening. But I don't believe that alcohol belongs at events that are family and kids events and on public property. There's many fine places that you can go and get yourself a drink. You can always stay home and then you're not driving. With alcohol use and abuse so prevalent among minors here in our county, we have to be positive examples of how we can have a good time without drinking. I think people have forgotten that we can do this. Excuse me, we can do this. I know the sheriff has said that there have not been any problem or been very few problems with the beer garden. We don't want to forget about the man they found a couple of years ago passed out by the industrial park wearing only his armband from the beer garden at the fair. I know it takes a lot of money to support events like the county fair, and I think the county fair is a huge asset to our community. But we need to remember, you know, at what expense are we supporting the fair with the beer garden? Also, it's competing with our private industries. It doesn't have to be somebody who has been a long-time alcoholic to be a problem. It can be a kid doing one stupid thing. And we all know with beer gardens, no matter how careful we are, with alcohol on the fairgrounds, there are kids drinking. And I happen to notice in Sunday's paper, there's an open letter from Larry Kuntz of Lincoln. And he said that he was on his way back from attending the Big Ten baseball championship game in Omaha and realized there were 66,000 people there that were having a good time supporting an event without alcohol. And he said he also is not a teetotaler, but it was fun to be able to attend an event and remember it afterwards. So that is my say.
I won't go into my long dissertation as usual, but I agree with everything that Kathy has said. And I think if you look at the statistics from the National Health Institute, they will tell you time and time again, the more we expose young people to alcohol, the more likely they are to become users. I am a teetotaler. I was not. And I had to learn the hard way. And I would tell everybody, please, use common sense. And I love the fair. I love everything we do. We don't need to have booths out there for all the kids showing animals and doing wonderful things to make it successful. And so I will also vote against these again this year. It has nothing to do with the wonderful fair.
More discussion or comments? Have a motion and a second? Vote. 5 in favor, Byers and Setzer against. Next, to approve or disapprove a quote from the Masonry Construction, Inc. for the mortar repair on the courthouse building in the amount of $11,313.
Move to approve.
Moved by Lytle.
Second.
Seconded by Byers. Discussion.
Pass these around. The first flat piece is the sandstone. The second piece is called Jahn, J-A-H-N, and that is a material that they use to repair stone. You can see how that flat piece, the courthouse itself is in very good condition, but after 120 years, it does start to flake off. And so our intent is to have this be a preventive maintenance item. And the bid is for the southeast area, be the corner of the southeast to the center of the door on the east side. It would not be the bottom 5 feet. It would be just the sandstone area. And this bid includes to remove the damaged sandstone and replace it with the Jahn repair mortar. And they would do the tuck pointing as needed in that area also. And this bid includes the man lip cleanup, protection of existing conditions, and protection of the existing sod and sidewalk with plywood. It does not include the southeast chimney. It would be just mainly on the building area. And this Jahn has been around for over 30 years. It came from Europe, where they had a lot of limestone buildings over there, and it's been in the United States since 1980-something, and they have had real good luck with it. It actually was used on the White House, the Empire State Building, and things like that. And this is something that I think we need to be really careful. It sounds like it'd be a good solution to our stone. We don't want to have a polka-dotted looking building, so this matches it really close. And one good thing about this Jahn also is that it is a breathable material. They say other materials fail because the moisture still tries to go through it, and that's where it will pop off. Or this is almost like part of the stone where it will continue to water, and the effervescence of the stone can still breathe.
I think a polka dot courthouse, maybe it'd be.
I don't like that idea.
And Dave, this doesn't involve this project itself, but I think just touch base on why that's important, because you were talking about the chimneys the other day and the fact that somebody had used some caulk on there that didn't breathe.
The building itself was always done with mortar. I don't know when, a long time ago, though, the chimneys were done with caulking, and that will not let the moisture go through, so it just more or less rots the stone around it. And so this is some to start here and hopefully, you know, just continue to work around the building and repair it. And as far as I know, the building has been tuck pointed, and I'm sure repairs were made, but I don't think there's any major stone restoration. So after 120 years, it's going to need some attention, and I think this would be a good product to use on it.
Okay. Discussion or questions for David? No. All right. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Yes, sir.
I guess one other question. Where's the money coming from?
We do have some in the general fund. I didn't know if this could come out of, we do have a courthouse improvement.
We have a buildings, county buildings fund.
We have a sinking fund that we've started putting dollars into for some of these things in the past, where before renovation, the renovation took place a couple of years ago, there was no
fund. There's money available?
Yes.
Okay.
Vote. 7-0 in favor.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dave.
Let's see. We've had discussion. Discuss, approve, or disapprove adding and enhancing the current surveillance system in the amount of $13,742. More discussion about that?
I think from what we've had discussion on, it sounds to me like we're expecting this is going to be next year's budget anyway, and it don't really sound like we're prepared to to move forward with it. Is that
this year's budget, next year's budget, or what's your feel on it, Gus? I mean, what kind of timeline do you think they're looking at?
Well, a lot depends on where the money's going to come from. If Dave feels there's money here for it now, if it's approved, then it's just a matter of when Dial's going to do it. We don't know the time frame, what they're looking at. So I guess a lot depends what they're going to do is what you're going to do today on it, I would imagine, as far as when.
We do in the buildings and ground, we have two line items. 1302 is the jail building repair. That's $122,000. And that was originally like the my take on that one is the $120,000 what was set up for the fire marshal to do those actual building requirements that were done for that. That one, well, it says we have $117,000 here, but I believe the $17,000 will be done or whatever. That one there's $100,000. Right below at 1304, we have other building repairs, Sheriff's Department, and we budgeted, this was set up, Don would have a better explanation, $22,000 in that budget for that. We spent $13,620, and there's $8,379 left in that one.
Mm-hmm. But this isn't really repair.
Yeah, like I kind of suggested earlier, I think some of this is probably buildings and grounds expense.
Right.
Some of it is, in my determination, would be that it would be jail expense for doing cost of doing business, and I think it needs to be in that budget so we know where it's, you know, in the future we can look back at it.
So we can take no action at this time and come back and make that part of the budget discussion next year?
For next year, yeah.
Where would you like to have it budgeted in the budget? Because I have no line for it.
Yeah, you have.
So I don't know how to put it in there. That's my problem.
Well, and I don't know. I'd like to ask Don, this $22,000 we budgeted here, how much in the preceding years, how much, or have you used most of that or not, or is there some cushion in there, I guess, for?
Well, my understanding is Dave uses that a lot for a lot of things like this, little things, not the big jobs like the one 120 was dedicated for the actual building renovations,
right,
whatever, for the fire marshal. It was those hit and miss items that he would just budget out of, that's my understanding.
Right.
Yeah.
Because, I'm a little bit like Gary. I think some should come out of each of it. I mean, some of it, I consider some of it, maybe we can budget half and half, I guess, next year out of each of those two for it, because it's something that, maybe the fire marshal didn't require it, but it's improvement actually to the building and the safekeeping of the building. I guess
it's common sense improvement.
Yeah,
it's all about liability for the county. That's the whole thing behind it. So, yeah.
And
so,
you know, as far as postponing the decision, I'm not sure we need to postpone the decision. I mean, are we expecting something new for them to present to us?
Well, it's just a matter of where we're going to take the money.
Yeah.
We haven't really arrived at a decision on how we're going to...
I mean, can't we either vote it up or down?
I don't think there seems to be any disagreement as far as the need. The sheriff says that we are in grave danger if we don't put these in, and so...
Well, not grave danger, Denny, but...
Oh, he
something
did.
Something could happen.
Well, and I know back, and I was part of... finance chairman at the time that we started the jail building repair, and we called it repair because we wanted to keep track of the amount of dollars we were putting in there. So
right.
I think it's very appropriate. You know, it's become somewhat semantics over repair, so pull repair off. I think you could realistically pull it from there so that we're tracking that, because out of the building and grounds budget, and just know that that's the expense that came out of there. And by resolution, we'll know where it came from if we state that. So we could go back and find that. The goal is just to keep track of those expenses that are ongoing in an old facility. So I would say that it was probably very reasonable that we pull it out of building and grounds budget, as I look at Davey's budget, and say the jail building repair. I think
the 1302.
The 1302, yeah,
yes.
2-1302. I think that's probably an appropriate place to do it.
Or if Don can check with state and see if they can put a slash in and repair and equipment or something. So,
well,
like you say, you all know where it's coming from.
Originally, and I'll just interject this in the discussion. Originally, that was set up, I believe. Everybody's made the comment and aware of that because of what the fire marshal was going to come down. They knew there was going to be expenses over the coming years. I think last year, I know in particular, when we had some of our budget meetings, we also talked about the fact to leave that in there so we know there's upcoming costs that not just the fire marshal is going to do, but there are costs to that jail because of the age of the facility, age of the structure, and just the upkeep to keep it in, I guess, good enough shape to keep it going all the time, that was going to be added cost. And part of our budget discussion last year was we wanted to leave that line in there for some of those or a lot of those expenses too. So it's not just the fire marshal, although the $17,000, those were a lot of things with the fire marshal came down and kind of added on this year. Mm-hmm. You know, hopefully they won't be coming back every 4 years and giving us this list or whatever. At least conversation, we weren't too bad.
When we refer to the fire marshal, but I also refer to the safety inspector who comes down and from department of the department, whatever you call it, and tells us whether we're safe or not and tells us whether we need to make those improvements. We've got several inspectors that come into our jail and tell us
jail
we have
standards.
To do several things, not just the fire marshal,
right.
Which we've done doors and disability things and what have you. And as long as we know where we're going to take it, I don't have any problem making the decision. But
I agree with Matt. I think we ought to take it all out of there because recalling our conversation in the budget process, we know that there is upkeep to that jail. Although at that time, too, there was some unknown as far as ADA or whatever. We had quite a bit of conversation about that. In the budget process, kind of figuring maybe that we would have that expense this year for the ADA, which turned out not to happen or be or whatever, too. So.
Okay, so I'll call for approve or disapprove adding and enhancing the current to the current surveillance system in the amount of $13,742, expenses to come from building grounds budget 2-1302 line. Jail building repair, that's a... Just so we're stating where that's coming from.
I would move to approve.
Moved by Setzer.
Second.
Second by Byers to approve. Any more discussion?
I guess the only thing I'd say, Matt, is I just, if with buildings and grounds funds, it's for the building. The sheriff is running operations out of there. And my feeling is that that's the cost of doing business. I just, personally, I'd rather see that be running at least part the inside cameras and that stuff needs to be running through the jail fund just so that we keep track that's actual expense of doing that business. You know, the probation office, we give them an office. We don't give them the cameras or whatever they need to do to for the safety of their job. So I guess that's my feeling on it, and I would prefer that we do it that way. But you know, I guess if we're 1302, you know, putting it all through buildings and grounds, I don't know.
I'll give you a little further explanation, and I'll know why I'll be a stinker when I say it. The reason we have that in there is to put that as a jail expense in building and grounds so that, because when you do a budget and you turn it over to the elected official, they can spend it. The line items are for tracking. And quite frankly, we didn't want to give Gus an extra $120,000 a year in the jail that we didn't have intervention on. So there it is. It is labeled as a jail, but... You know,
absolutely.
So that we could come and have these discussions just like this. So, and I say that to be a stinker to Gus because that's why we didn't get.
Yeah, I know what you drive. That's right, man.
Let the record show that. Anyway, but those were the discussions because we wanted to have. We knew there were expenses out there, and we wanted to have this discussion. Actually, quite frankly, when you give an elected official a budget, it's their budget, and the line items are for tracking, so they can spend it. And so we thought, and Gus has been amicable to that. It hasn't been anything under the table. It's good to have the discussion.
Just one question. You said some of these are going to be audioed. Are you going to discuss, you know, I guess the concern I have is on third floor where you have a lot of defense counsel that are meeting with clients in the hallway.
Well, audios, I think when the chief's talking about that, the sheriff's office.
You're not talking about audio
here.
Okay, that's fine. I just... Depending on how it was reported, you know.
Completely separate system. I understand
that. Well, I got to find a different place to meet.
Just the bathroom outside your office. Yeah, that's the only place to audio.
As long as we're not going in the bathroom.
No. We have a motion in a second. Any further discussion? Last call. Seeing none, vote. Six in favor, Juergens Juergens is against. Mm-hmm. Motion passes. Okay, Rick Nation, Blue Valley Community Action, presenting the annual report.
Enjoy coming here because you guys are fun. I'll listen to them.
We are funny all of the time.
Well, thank you.
Said some fun, not funny.
Some people don't appreciate it.
Dave, I broke that. I won.
Yes, you did.
Oh, okay, thank you.
So don't blame Doug, yeah. No.
How are you doing, Rick?
Thank you.
This is our annual report, and for last year. And I'm going to just highlight a few items, if I might. And then there's a couple attachments inside that are paperclip there that we'll get to later. Excuse me, I got to get my eyes on here. I'd like to point out, the first thing I'd like to point out is on page 3, a couple items that sort of go against the generally perceived notions about our clients, and this is our client data on these pages. Family structure. Among Blue Valley Community Action's families, the average family size is 2.14, which is actually smaller than the average size in the community, which is 2.55. A lot of people think that people who are low income have huge families. In our case, that's not the case. We are talking primarily, our clients are primarily working poor. And that's the other point that you see here under employment, that the majority of our clients are actually employed, maybe not full-time or at high-paying jobs, but they're a lot of the majority of them are obtaining some kind of employment. So you can sort of see that those are two items that I think sort of fly in the face of generally thought of situations for low-income people. On page 4, there's a little bit about the insurance of our clients, and the thing this, you have to remember, this is before the Affordable Care Act actually went into effect. And so you see that the private coverage is still off 5% over the previous year, and that was a trend that was going on for quite some time among our clients. They couldn't afford private insurance. Medicaid was off, and that's primarily because of procedures and changes at the state level that actually restricted use in a lot of cases. Except for the Children's Health Program, there was a lot of increase there. Otherwise, it was, you know, less than a percentage anywhere else. So just a couple things that I thought I'd point out. One thing that I wanted to mention is that Blue Valley was one of the organizations in the state who had got a federal grant to do the Affordable Care Act enrollments, what we call navigators in the marketplace. Well, as you all know, that marketplace rollout was pretty disastrous, but you know, that once they did get it going, the community action agencies who got this grant accounted for 22,000 of the 35,000 that were enrolled in the marketplace. We figured we did a pretty fair job. That does not include those who enrolled in health care insurance in a normal outside of the marketplace, which according to the Department of Insurance was 135,000 more people enrolled in health insurance. So the marketplace only covered a small portion of that. So most people still did it through the normal procedures, contacting an agent. On page 5 and 6, a lot of these are our kind of what I'd call emergency type assistance programs. Excuse me here. And the reason I bring this up is because these are, I think, one of the areas where we help the county out a lot. We try to have the clients come to us before they come to the county for public assistance. And if they haven't, you know, we ask the county to send them to us because we might be able to help save the county some money here. And we sort of look at ourselves as a partnership there. The commodity supplemental food program, I should tell you, is changing. The federal government, when they passed the last budget, changed the program. It no longer will serve infants, children, and pregnant women. It just serves the elderly now. So that's we're still allowed to serve the people who were enrolled before, but as their terms come off, then it's just going to go to the elderly, which it had been 85% elderly in the past anyways. But moving through, the rest of these things, a lot of our programs, and you can take a look at that. These are agency-wide things. I wanted to point out Head Start on page 9. We have about 400 kids enrolled in Head Start, which is it's more than just a preschool. It's zero to 5 year olds, which we have early Head Start and Head Start. And you can see some of the statistics there on that page. What I wanted to mention is we have 400 kids enrolled over our whole area. And because they go into the families and work with the families, there's also kids, siblings, and parents. So when you talk about the whole size of the families that are impacted, there's 1,427 people impacted in that program. The bad news is we have 400 kids on a waiting list as well that we don't have the funds to serve. So, you know, we're only serving half of the people who are actually asking for our help there. But that's a federally funded program, and the Congress, no matter which party has been in charge, has always looked at that as a positive program. And we expect that there will be some additional funds coming in, but probably not enough to double the services there. On page 11, I wanted to mention about weatherization. Weatherization program served 102 individuals this past year, but the year before, we served 291. And this year, we served 44 households. Last year before that was 114 households. The big drop in that was because of the way the government ran that program. They gave a stimulus for a few years, and then while they were working on the stimulus, they cut the original program back to one-third its normal size, figuring they had all the stimulus money. Well, when the stimulus ran out, of course, they didn't put this program back to its normal size. So we went from 12 staff in weatherization to 3. And you can see the numbers that it impacted people. They're starting to put a little more money into it, and we have hired 2 people back from those 9 that we had to let go. But you can sort of see that that's a pretty big impact on the program, and that's a pretty good program. There's about a 30% savings in energy use once we weatherize a house. I'm going to just slide over a few more pages and get to the page 16 where we talk about foster grandparents. Foster grandparents, some of you may know, started here in Beatrice. It was the first foster grandparent program in the state, a pioneer foster grandparent. It was originally operated by BSDC, but when BSDC wanted out, they asked us to step forward, which we did. And so now we operate the program, but we operate it over a large area, not just in the Beatrice area. But still, Gage County has the highest group of volunteers. 30 of the foster grandparents are in Gage County of 64. So you have by far the largest portion of that. You can see some of the numbers there. What I wanted to bring it up for not was just to talk about how much was in Gage County, but we're always in need of additional foster grandparents. So if anybody knows anybody 55 or older who would like to be work with children who are in need, we would be glad to have them enrolled. They can contact us at www.bbca.net, and we can get you some volunteers. We'd love to have more volunteers there. They do get a stipend, like a living allowance for helping out, and we ask 15 hours a week. And so on the next page, I wanted to point out some things. Friends of Blue Valley is basically what we –
have set up as a volunteer bureau. It's not just for Blue Valley volunteers, but for other agencies. We try to help other agencies with volunteers when we find people who want to work through us. That we do some training on them. We do a we have a whole bunch of credentials we check and criminal histories and those kind of things. We check, so they go through a process of screening, and then we try to put them in there. These volunteers also help us raise funds. And one of the things I wanted to mention, while I mentioned how the government has been cutting back, private donations this past year were over $115,000, and that's up $9,000 over the previous year. And if you go down the page a little bit there, you'll see the faith-based organizations, the churches, donated $64,000. This is in addition to that $115,000. They donated $64,000, and that's up $24,000 over the previous year. So the local support has been increasing as the government, for federal government support, has been cutting back. Unfortunately, that $33,000 increase isn't making up for all the government cuts, but it does show how people do try to step forward in the area, and so we have to be proud of our area and the folks that are in it. You see some new services down here. We listed some of them. We did also have juvenile diversion program in Jefferson County has returned, and we did also expand our WIC program into Polk and Butler counties in north part of our area. We do not serve the WIC program in this county. There's different state contracts with different people, but Blue Valley does the six counties north, in the north part of our service area, but there's another organization that does Jefferson, Dare, and Engage, so. I just thought I'd point that out. We have some staff statistics here. The point I want to make here is that these staff numbers are down 19 from the previous year because of some of the federal cuts. And you can sort of see that I'm still a little outnumbered at Blue Valley as far as gender, quite a bit. On pages 19 and 20.
Are you going to introduce your boss?
Oh, yes, I should. Heather Lytle, by the way, is who puts this together for us.
Right.
She does some wonderful. And she does this at the office. We do this in-house.
Some of us know she is in charge.
She's my memory and keeps me on track.
Right.
If she wasn't here, I'd quit. Page 19 and 20 are... we do a statewide survey, our state association does, and this is all the 9 community action agencies in Nebraska. And the survey is done statewide, and every 3 years we do a general type survey to get information. And then in between years, we pick a topic. And so, like in 2010, we did a general survey, and 11 we did, I think, was employment, and then in 12 was finance, or maybe it was the other way around, I can't remember. And then again in 13, we did the general survey again. The stuff on the on page 19 is some of the statewide statistics. Again, you can go to our website to get the full survey. And on page 20 is specific to our service area. And the way this statewide thing is done statewide, but they break it out by the various community action area service areas. And so you can see on that page, if you can read that fine print, and my glasses aren't quite strong enough here, but I can tell you that on the right side of that column is the 2010 statistics, and then in the center there is the 2013. And actually, there's some positive news among the in our area there, so I just thought I'd point that out. But again, www.bvca.net is where you can get the full results of the survey. On pages 21 and 22 is just financial information. I always like to point out to the counties when I'm traveling that these little pie charts, you see that little yellow sliver on page 22, that is the funds that we get from local governments. That's mostly counties, but a few cities donate as well. Because it's such a small number there, every dollar that the county puts in, we bring in $142.58 from other sources into the area. So we are doing pretty good leverage on the dollars you donate to us. And I think you get a pretty good return on your investment there, is what I'm trying to say. The little box below the pie charts there, those are corporations that are for-profit corporations that are some of our housing operations. Sunset Crown, of course, is here in Gage County. We had had a whole bunch of these, I think nine altogether, but we're down to four. The other partnerships break up. After the, these are what we call tax credit properties, and the investors that we have, after 15 years, they get no more tax credits, and so they want out. And so when they leave, then those assets come to Blue Valley as a general partner in these relationships. But it also brings in an awful lot of private revenue when we build them. So these four are the remaining four of those partnerships, and they will be coming off in the next few years. Some of these will start coming off. I think Beatrice will be the first one that will switch to Blue Valley ownership. And because they're, these are all crown, what we call crown projects, that means they're individual houses, and they're, and we consider that a lease to own situation. So the tenants will then have an opportunity. Ever since they've been renting, we've been putting $50 a month from their rent payment into an escrow account. And so the tenants then will be able to then start to purchase those homes. And so there's, if, Merriweather, I think is the name of the street that most of these are on. I think one's on Court, but the rest of them are on Merriweather. And, those will become, individual homeowners in the future. So, this is a long-term process. It's a way of taking people who normally wouldn't be eligible for home ownership because of their credit situation. We work with them, teaching them how to deal with the operating the house of their own, and also helping them save for a down payment, and training them on how they might better be a better homeowner. And so I think we are really moving people ahead that way. And because one of the things we found, it's not just an income situation. A lot of times people don't get ahead because they have no assets to back them up. And if we can get them a home as an asset, then that gives them some kind of a fallback position when they have a crisis. And so that, I just wanted to let you know that those are happening, and the one in Beatrice will probably come off. I think it's in 2015 or 16, but it's coming up. It'll be the first of those four. On the next couple pages is just the different locations of our offices around the area. And on the final page, we have an acknowledgement to some of our donors. Obviously, we have so many hundreds and hundreds of donors, probably thousands. We can't list them all, so we just do some of them at larger amounts. I wish I could say that we could list them all, but it probably would be a bigger book than what we got. This little brochure that was attached is about our board of directors, and Gage County is doing relatively well. We have two vacancies. We recently had a private sector alternate leave the board from Pinnacle Bank, so we're looking for a follow-up person there. And then, of course, you folks have decided to have one representative and not an alternate, so that's open. I have to say, I appreciate Kathy being on our board, and prior to that, Denny was a very involved person on our board. And on the other thing that I have on my is a sheet that is specific information to Gage County. We thought we'd pull a few of some of our data out just for Gage County, and that should be in your packet. I don't happen to have a copy of that. I have the the budget request, which I'm not supposed to talk about today, and so it's, I give that to, I'm not sure I know your name, but Don, I think, takes care of your budget committee materials, so I left it for her. Any questions at all? And I, like I said, I do appreciate your contributions when you get them, because they are voluntary, but we think we are a good investment for you. And so hopefully you will think that when it comes budget time. Any other questions from anybody? Press? Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, folks.
Thank you, Rick, for all you do.
Thank you, folks.
Your motion to put
thank
the
your boss file. Over there. I have there.
Make the motion to put the annual report on file.
Second. Seconded by buyer's vote. 7-0. Approve or disapprove child support and enforcement contract between Gage County and Steve Kravick's attorney.
Move to approve.
Moved by Lytle.
Second.
Second by Byers.
Yeah.
Discussion.
See you, Senator.
Kravick's done this for years for us.
Yeah, the same contract, just updated the dates.
Questions for Roger on that?
I guess the only thing I would say is that we looked into this a little bit more last year or 2 years ago, if I remember right, as to whether or not there was different bidders out there or whatever, and it appears to be a really good deal for the county.
Yeah, Mr. Kravitz does a very good job with this, and the cost is very de minimis compared to other counties. We looked at that, and in fact, he does a lot of other counties. They don't like to see him come in because he is very, very efficient. The local folks don't want to see Mr. Kravitz, so dollar for dollar, he does a terrific job.
And the local and the regional bar associations are very supportive of him and what he does, and so it's very good. We're very lucky.
And as an employer that has to deal with him, he's always been very helpful, and his staff has been very helpful when I've had questions as far as some child support orders I've had to deal with.
Good. All right. I have a motion and a second. No further discussion. Vote. 7-0 to approve. Next, approve or disapprove Gage County Communities Parks and Recreation Improvement Grant to the Village of Pickerel in the amount of $1,000.
Motion to approve.
Moved by Dorn.
Second.
Second by Lytle. Discussion. 7-0 to approve. Last thing on the agenda, Myron. Do you need a break? Okay,
before we go into closed session, right?
Break for Myron. But the next thing we'll take a brief break and then we'll come back and I'll ask for a motion to go to closed session. Right now, we'll just sit in recess for a second at 10:30. Come back, and there'll be no action, and I just need a motion to go into closed session to discuss personnel necessary for the protection of the public interest and for the protection of needless injury to the reputation of an individual.
I move that we go into closed session, 10:34.
Moved by Lytle.
Second.
Second by Setzer.
Everybody.
Vote. 7-0.
And you don't need to stay, Michelle. We'll come. We'll just grab you.
Okay.
Make the motion to
this moment.
There we go.
Go
ahead.
Sorry. Make the motion to come out of closed session 11:30.
Moved by Lytle, seconded by Dorn. Vote 7-0. Anything else for the board meeting? All right, seeing none, we'll adjourn 11:30.
Glad you can come back.
It's 11.